Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top, about halfway down the narrow lines. Line begins Ravashi. Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, we started talking about yesterday the question of saving Sifrei Kodesh from a fire on Shabbos. We said that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, then as long as there's no issue of Pikuach Nefesh, then you obviously can't put out the fire. And the Chachamim also made certain rules about what you're allowed and not allowed to save because they don't want you to panic and end up completely forgetting that it's Shabbos and putting out the fire. But we mentioned in the Mishnah that Kisvei HaKodesh, that books of Tanakh, are not only you're allowed to save them, but we said you're even allowed to, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah on Amud Beis, you're allowed to slightly bend the rules of Shabbos in order to save them, such as to carry them to a place where normally you wouldn't be able to carry on Shabbos. Not a Rishus Rabbim, of course. But as we'll see in the next Mishnah and in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, a Mavi Mefulash or a Mavi She'ena Mefulash, whatever. So, Iboyalahu. So now we have a question like this. Hagil Yonin Shel Sefer Torah, the blank spaces on a Sefer Torah. Now, there could be a few different kinds of blank spaces. You could have, we discussed yesterday, the case where Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, 13 lines from the top. You could have the case where you had, we discussed yesterday, where you had a Sefer Torah written and then the letters got erased, and now all you have is blank parchment over there. We said if you have 85 letters left, then you can still save the Sefer Torah, and we had a machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Chista, whether those 85 have to all be in one place or whether they can be scattered around. So that could be one kind of gilyon. And then you also have the blank areas that are written to begin with on a Sefer Torah. You're supposed to have between one column and the next of the Sefer Torah, you have a space. At the top, you have a space. At the bottom, you have a space. At the beginning and the end of the Sefer Torah. So right now, we're assuming that gilyonim, when we're asking about gilyonim, b'pashtus, we're talking about all those different cases. So how gilyonim shall sefer Torah matzil noisim mipnei adleika, or in matzil noisim mipnei adleika. Can you save those from fire on Shabbos to the same rules that we said in our Mishnah, that you save them on Shabbos, and what it says in the next Mishnah, that you can save them to a mavoi hamafulash, or a mavoi she'en hamafulash, or whatever, does that apply also to these gilyonim? So Toshma, we'll bring a proof from what we learned yesterday. Sefer Torah Shabbola, we said if a Sefer Torah wears out and most of the letters have gotten erased, im yesh b'lakit shmonim b'chomesh osiyas, if you have left enough in it to be able to collect 85 intact letters, kigoin parashas vayhi ben tzaya on, which 85 letters is the equivalent of the size of the parasha of vayhi ben tzaya, which as we said yesterday in the Gemara is to a certain extent considered as if it was a chomesh of its own. Matzilin, then we're allowed to save it. Vim lav ein matzilin. If not, we said you're not allowed to save it. Now, if you're going to save amai, if you're going to say that you can't save the gilyonim, if you're going to say that you could save the gilyonim rather, then why would we need the 85 letters? Typically, mishum gilyon didei, all you have is you just have the entire Sefer Torah. It is parchment that was used to write a Sefer Torah. And now most of the letters are gone, but you still have the part. If you're going to say that you're allowed to save the gilyonim, again, the gilyonim include the area that used to be written on and now is blank. So then in that case, if you're going to say you can save the gilyonim, then you would automatically be able to save those as well. So wouldn't that prove then that you can't save the gilyonim? And the only reason in this case why you're allowed to save the Sefer Torah is because it has 85 letters left. The answer is the Gemara says not necessarily. Bola shiny. It's different when the Sefer Torah wore out. Once the letters wore out, then the gilyon itself doesn't have the same level of kedusha as well. The question is what happens where the question is, what about the gilyonim, the margins on the top and the bottom and so on and so forth? That's what we have to ask about. So you have like this, when you write a Sefer Torah, there are halachas about it. You have to have, there has to be a certain amount of space between one column of the Sefer Torah and the next one. You have to have at least two etzbois between them. You have to have three etzbois and four etzbois, one on the top, one on the bottom. I think three on the top and four on the bottom, but I might have that backwards, whatever. You have at the beginning of the Sefer Torah, you have to have enough to be able to roll around the Eitz Chaim. At the end of it, you have to have, Rashi mentions further along on the Amud, that you have to have enough to be able to wrap around the whole Sefer, although really the Gemara and Baba Basra, where these dinim are, Torah says that that's really only when you, when you're writing Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim all in one gigantic roll. When you're writing just a Sefer Torah by itself, and it has two Atzei Chaim, then you just need at the end also long enough to be able to roll around the second Atzei Chaim. Whatever, the point is that you have blank spaces on the Sefer Torah. So, but the Gemara is saying, bola shiny, it's different. If the Sefer Torah itself is worn out, then if it doesn't have 85 letters left, then it doesn't really have its kedusha left. The question is, when the gilyonim themselves are still intact, but the writing is gone. Good morning. And by the way, the Noda Behuda points out, it's not that we're saying it has no kedusha at all. I mean, we learned yesterday that even if a Sefer Torah rots away or is eaten up by worms or whatever, where obviously it's not readable, you still have to put it in Gnizah, you still have to put it in Shemus. What we're talking about is strictly as far as this din of being allowed to bend the halachas of Shabbos in order to save it. So Gemara says Toshma, Sefer Torah Shen Nimchak. Okay, we have another Braisa that says if a Sefer Torah is erased. So the previous Braisa was talking about Shabola, where the Sefer Torah wore out. Where there you could say, in other words, the parchment and the ink are worn out. Here, the second one, we're talking about Shenimchak, in other words, where the parchment is still completely intact and just the lettering of the Sefer Torah got erased. So again, Im Yesh B'Lakat Shmonim V'Chomashosius, if there's 85 letters left of it, that could be collected together. Kugon Parashas Vahibin Sayah'on, which is the size of Parashas Vahibin Sayah, Matzilin, then you're allowed to save it on Shabbos. V'im Lav Ein Matzilin, and if not, then not. So the question is, v'amai, now again, you should ask why, if you're going to say that you're allowed to save the gilyonim, typically mishum gilyon didei, then you anyway have the gilyon itself, that you have the margins themselves of the Sefer Torah, are still intact, and here, or not even the margins, here we're talking about the actual area where the letters were written. Again, you have in the previous case, fine, it was bala, it was worn out. So you could argue that maybe then the parchment itself doesn't really have any chashivos anymore either. But here we're talking about the parchment is still fairly fresh, just the letters got erased. So shouldn't that prove that you can't, that the gilyonim themselves do not have the level of kedusha to save them, and only when they're written on, only when they have 85 letters? When they score lines, that's called sirtut. Yeah, the place where the letters are. So you have that. No, so Gilyon is the area that is written on. Gilyon is the area that's not written on. Yeah, the area in between. No, in fact, actually, I think the Rashba says on our Gemara over here, the Gemara is not asking about the space between, the Gemara is going to mention soon a case where the Gilyonim are cut off. Now, we're not talking about, for example, let's say, you cut off, let's say, the space between the lines, because obviously, if you do that, you don't have anything resembling a Sefer Torah. Those kinds of things, you have to have those space. In other words, he distinguishes between, there's the spaces that you have to have, Parshat, in order to have a written Sefer Torah. We have, for example, every letter has to be, it's called Mukaf Gvil. Every letter has to be surrounded by blank parchment. Otherwise the ksav is not valid. So that we're not referring to as gilyonim. That we're considering to be just part of the Sefer Torah, of the written part of the Sefer Torah itself. We're talking about the parts that are there more for the beauty of the Sefer Torah. That's the margins on top and on bottom and between the columns and so forth. So if you have a Sefer Torah that mostly got erased, then we're saying that only if it has 85 letters left can you save it. So obviously that shows the gilyonim themselves, the blank margins around it and whatever, don't have, or for that matter, the area where the writing was doesn't have kedusha anymore. Because if it had kedusha, then just even if it has less than 85 letters, just for that you should be able to save it. The answer is mokamak savlokamaboyali. The answer is the place where the writing was and got erased, obviously, I'm not asking about, because it was used to begin with in order to write with, and once the writing is gone, then obviously it loses that high level of kedusha, and therefore there's no question about it. Kodesh Agav, Agav Ksav Hu Kodesh. Because after all, why was it Kodesh in the first place? Because of the writing on it. Ozo Ksav, Ozo Lek Dushase. So once the writing on it is gone, the kedusha goes with it as well. So there's no question, obviously, that the area that was written on and now constitutes a gilyon that you wouldn't be able to, that if unless you have 85 letters left, you can't save it on Shabbos. Ki kamei boyli shomayla v'shomata shemnin parish la parish v'shemnin daf la daf shemit chilas asefer shemit soif asefer. What we're asking about is the ones that you have the margin on top and on bottom. Again, the three etzbois and four etzbois that you have on the top and the bottom. V'shemnin parish la parish. Also, the space between one parasha and the next, which again, you have now, you have the psuchas and stumas, but those are not needed in order for the letters themselves to be kosher. The letters themselves are kosher. The letters themselves would be kosher even if the parashias were written wrong. Just if the parashias were written wrong, you don't have a valid sefer Torah. But those spaces themselves are not needed for the kashrus of the letters. Those are more needed for the kashrus of it as a sefer Torah. So therefore, we can talk about those gilyonim. Let's say that you have those blank areas over there. You have also Shaben daf ladaf, the space between one column and the next, where you need at least two etzbois between one column and a sefer Torah of the next. Shabbat chilas a sefer, at the beginning of the sefer, where you need a large enough blank area to wrap around the Eitz Chaim. Shabbat soif a sefer, and what's at the end of the sefer, which again, Rashi says, if you're writing them all in one big volume, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, then you only have it on one Eitz Chaim, and then what you do is the end, you need to have a space large enough to wrap around the entire thing, and if you're writing only a Sefer Torah, then you just need enough to wrap around the second Eitz Chaim, because the Sefer Torah is written with two Atzei, Sefer Torah has two Atzei Chaim. For all other Sfarim other than Sefer Torah, all you need is one Eitz Chaim. Only for a Sefer Torah do you need two. In fact, you have, I mean, nowadays, for example, you look at a Megillah Esther, really, you mean, when you get down to it, other than Sefer Torah, Megillah Esther is the only one nowadays that we write on parchment anymore, and you can find old Megillah Esthers, you see sometimes in pictures from a few hundred years ago or whatever, where they used to write them and put them on one Eitz Chaim. Nowadays, it's much more common that we have Megillah Esthers that are just parchment by itself without an Eitz Chaim at all, but older one, you can find older ones that have an Eitz Chaim, but only one. So the question is about those blank spaces, which were to begin with designed to be blank spaces. They were never to be written on in the first place. So the question would be those. So those were originally blank. Now they're also blank. On the other hand, the Sefer Torah wore out. So the question is, okay, so the Gemara says, "V'tipukle mishumahu." Okay, so then in that case, obviously, we can still prove that you can't save the gilyonim, because if you could, then what about in the case where the Sefer Torah was erased and you have less than 85 letters? Okay, but if you're saying that the gilyonim themselves count, that would be reason enough to save this worn out Sefer Torah, because it still has the gilyonim. The fact that you need 85 letters seems to show that the gilyonim themselves are not important. The answer is okay. The Gemara says the guy is Vishadi. Fine, but the question could be, what if these margins were cut off? What if these margins were cut off? All you have left is the place of the ksav. Now we can talk about the question of the Sefer Torah itself, the area where the writing itself was. Are you allowed to save it? And the answer is only if it has 85 letters. And a different way that Rishonim understand the answer is that the clarification of the question is that if those margins themselves were cut off and are separate, placed separately from the Sefer, are you allowed to save them on Shabbos? So originally they were attached to the Sefer Torah, but then somebody cut them off. So now are you allowed to save those pieces of parchment which once were part of a Sefer Torah and now aren't anymore? So according to Rashi, the question is the question is about the Sefer Torah itself. Now it doesn't have gilyonim anymore, so now the only thing that can save it is if it has 85 letters. If we assume the gilyonim themselves are something that has kedusha of its own. Or according to the other Mefarshim, we're saying that if the Gilyonim were cut off, then the question is whether you can save them. Okay, so still no proof yet. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring a proof from a Mishnah. We learned near the beginning of the Masechta in the first parak, we talked about the concept that there's a Gzeira Dirabanan, that a Sefer Torah and other Sifrei Kodesh make a person's hands tomei. We just discussed over there the idea that they used to store food of Truma together with Sefer Torah, figuring that they're all Kaddish, and then mice would eat the food and they damage the Sefer Torah. So they made this Gzeira. So what exactly is Matama your hands and what is not? Toshma, Haguyonin Shomaila Bashamata, the blank spaces, the margins at the top and the bottom of the Sefer Torah, Shabain Parashala Parasha, the blank space between one parasha and the next, we have a parasha Psucha or Stoma, Shabain Dafla Daf, between one column of the Sefer Torah and the other one, Shabbatchilas HaSefer, Shabbasoifas Sefer, and that they're at the beginning of the Sefer Torah and the end of it, all of them Matama Naseidayim, all of them are Matama your hands. So we see, in other words, that those do have kedusha of their own. Well, that's actually why the minute that plus the fact that you don't want to erase the letters is precisely why we touch the Sefer Torah with the talis or with the gautel of the Sefer Torah rather than with our bare hands. I mean, nowadays we're not particular about Truma V'Tahara anyway, but it's more a matter of out of respect for the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. The Gemara actually has an expression in a couple of places that if a person, we actually learned it actually also in the first parak in that sugya over there, kol oichas Sefer Torah orum nikbar orum, that if a person holds a Sefer Torah with his bare hands, then the severe consequences. So for that reason, we don't touch the Sefer Torah with our bare hands, but also because we don't want to erase the writing, we don't want that the oil on our fingers should erase the writing. So we touch the Sefer Torah with the gautel or with the talis. But no, because it doesn't transfer. But in any case, because the gzera is that they're matama your hands and make them as if they were sheni. But it's only your hands. They're not matami all the things that they touch. So they're not matami the talus at all. Yeah. Right? Well, a sheni latruma would have to go to them. It actually would. Well, no. So actually what it is for hands, what you'd have to do is you'd have to wash your hands. You'd have to wash your hands until it's a daim, and then that would be that. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So the point is that we see that those blank spaces are matame aseidayim. So they obviously have the kedusha of the Sefer Torah. Therefore, you should be able to save them on Shabbos. The answer is Dilma Agav Sefer Torah shiny. Maybe it's different when they're still attached to the Sefer Torah. So we're talking about, in other words, you have the Sefer Torah itself is still completely intact. All you're talking about, the Mishnah there is talking about, let's say the person didn't touch the actual written part of the Sefer Torah. He just touched the margins on the edges. And we're saying that's still Matama Seidayim. Fine, because it's all one big thing. It's all one Sefer Torah. But again, here we're talking about the question, what if the letters of the Sefer Torah are mostly erased and you have less than 85 of them, or what happens if the margins are cut off? Yeah, so you can't prove that from that Mishnah. Toshma, another Braisa says, Haguyonin, the blank spaces, the Sifre Minin, and the Sforim of Minim, Ein Matzilinos and Mipnead Leika, you don't save them from fire on Shabbos, Elam Isrof and Mimkaimon, Hein Vazgur Esehen, you let them be burnt where they are, them together with the names of Hashem. Now, what are Sifrei Minim? Rashi explains that the Minim are Goyish priests, so they can include Christians, they can include Minim in general, as various people who have mistaken notions, deliberate mistaken notions about Elikus. The Rambam summarizes, like you have, for example, a min includes somebody who claims there's no Hashem at all, or that there's two gods or more, or that Hashem has a body, or like there's five different definitions. So it includes, it comfortably includes the Christians, it includes various other groups like that. So Rashi explains that we're talking about they wrote themselves Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. They even wrote it in Ksav Ashuri. They even wrote it in Lashon Kodesh. So it looks exactly like one of our Sefer Torah. But the person who wrote it was a min. The person who wrote it is one of these people who's into Avodah Zarah or other heretical beliefs like that. Tosfos says that no, that's not what we're talking about over here, because the Gemara is going to say over here, you let them get burnt. You don't actually burn them themselves. You don't actually burn them yourself. Whereas you have a Gemara elsewhere that says that if you have a Sefer Torah that was written by a min, then you actually burn it. You don't just let it be burned. You yourself burn it. Now we're going to have a machlokas on that topic soon. You're going to have Reb Tauf. You're going to have the Chachamim, Reb Tauf and Reb Yosi. But Tosfos says it's a doichet to say that din is only according to Reb Tauf. So Tosfos learns that we're talking about over here. You find a Sefer Torah like that or something like that in the hands of a min. You don't know who wrote it. So you don't know who wrote it. Whether the min himself wrote it, in which case you'd have to burn it, or whether somebody else wrote it and just the min got a hold of it. Anyway, so. So we're saying that you don't save them from a fire. You leave them to be burnt in their place. Hein Vazkere say, and name them together with the names of Hashem that are in them. Now my lab gilyonim the sefer Torah. Now when we say in this braisa gilyonim, but pashtus we mean the blank spaces of a sefer Torah. Because what else would it mean? No, because the osius aren't called gilyonim. The osius is yeah gilyon. We said all this time means the blank space. The answer is no. Look, gilyonim to sifrei minim. Not necessarily. Maybe it means the blank spaces of the sifrei minim. So again, you have the sefer Torah or supposed sefer Torah that's in the possession of a min. It itself has margins because again, it was written like a regular sefer Torah and it has margins on the top and the bottom and the sides and so forth. So now you can talk about those gilyonim. I says, what do you mean? Hash to sifrei minim gufayu in matzilin. What do you mean? If you're not even allowed to save the sifrei minim themselves, gilyonim miboya, what do you need to say about the blank spaces? Obviously, the blank spaces of their svarim have even less kedusha than the written part. The answer is hachikama. You're right. What the braisa means is the sifrei minim harein kegilyonim. You should know the sifrei minim have a similar din to gilyonim. In other words, that actually we might be saying just that. The gilyonim themselves do not have, or rather, gilyonim over here could mean blank parchments that never were written on the first place. Now, obviously, you have parchment, even if that parchment was made for the purpose of writing a Sefer Torah. If the Sefer Torah was never written on it, obviously, it doesn't have the level of Kedusha to save it from a fire on Shabbos. So what we can be saying is, even the Sifrei Minim, even though they are, in fact, written, and they do have the words of the Torah on them, nevertheless, they have the din-like parchment that was blank, that was never written on, namely, that you don't save them. We can't necessarily prove from that about gilyonim, where you have, again, where you have the blank spaces in an existing Sefer Torah, where again, the Sefer Torah is worn out, and now you're wondering about the area where the writing, well, you said the area where the writing used to be, we said, never mind, there it has to have 85 letters or nothing. But we said, what about the originally blank spaces of that very same Sefer Torah, or what about if the blank spaces were cut off or whatever? So we don't really have a proof one way or the other. Because you have to realize these minim that we're talking about over here, as the Gemara is going to say soon, are people that the Gemara is going to call them soon, makirin v'kofrin. They recognize Hashem, but they deliberately deny them. So they deliberately deny him. So again, it includes, for example, the early Christians. When you get down to it, most of the early Christians were Jews, but they believed in Yozel, and they believed in his various ideas or whatever. We're going to have a story about that in the Gemara soon. So they had grown up. They had grown up as Jews among Jews. They knew the basic halachas of writing a sefer Torah. And when they're writing sefer Torah for themselves to use to be able to prove their various doctrines or whatever, then yeah, b'pashtus they would write them the same way as we write ours. They wouldn't find necessarily all the dinim, but at least they'd follow the majority of them. Yeah. And again, according to Tosfos, we're talking about a Sefer Torah that you find in the hands of a min, and you don't know whether the min wrote it or not. The Ritva, by the way, says an expression about this. Okay, but still, why shouldn't you save it on the chance that maybe it was written by a frum yid? And he says, very simple, because like this, the very fact that it's in the hands of a min itself makes it kind of, it's almost as if it was burned. It's already in a place of such gnai. You saving it from a fire on Shabbos is not going to help. It's not going to help with that. It's still going to be in the hands of the min. Therefore, you may as well just let it stay over there and let it get burned, because it's no worse off one way than the other, basically. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Gufa. Getting back to what we said before, we said hagilyonim v'sifrei minim, we said the blank spaces and sifrei minim, which now we're saying means that the sifrei minim count like blank spaces, they count like blank parchments for this purpose. Ein matzilinosin v'pnei adleika, you don't save them from a fire on Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi says something else. B'chol kodeh asazkodes shebehen v'gonzon. If it's on a weekday, then what you do is you cut out any place where it has Hashem's name in it, and you keep those. You keep them. V'gonzon, those you put in Shemus, in case maybe after all that he did write it l'shem kedushas Hashem or whatever. V'ashar sofa, and the rest of it you burn. So not like the Tanakhama, who says you just leave it alone and eventually it may get burnt by itself. Rabbi Yossi is saying you actually have to burn these Sifrei Minim. However, what you do is first you cut out the names of Hashem in case they do have Kedusha. Yeah. Amr Reb Taufin, on the other hand, Reb Taufin says, no. Akapeach es bonai. may I cut off my children? We learned in the first parak, this was an expression that Reb Tarfon used to use a lot whenever he came across a halacha that like he found strange, he couldn't understand it or whatever. He used this expression, akapeach es bana, like may I lose my children if such and such is true or not true. It was like a lashon shvua. Some of the Mephoshim explained that he would say it as a lashon of tsar, like I'm so bothered by the fact that Torah is being forgotten and we have machlokas in on these things. Like I feel like I almost feel like I'm losing my children. Anyway, whatever it is, that was his common expression. So actually, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that yes, in the end, what a tzaddik says comes true. So actually, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that in the end he had a grandson who didn't have any sons who survived him, but he had a daughter who eventually got married and had a son, and the son was off the derech, and then Rebbe met up with him and was able to get him to do tshuva. It is considered like kilas chacham. So yeah. That killas chacham afilat tanai ba. Yeah, that's. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Now that you mention it, the Gemara mentions with Yehuda ben Tama, it's Ereb ben Chacham. Different chachamim had different expressions that they use. Reb Tarfon's signature expression, like for these kinds of things, is akapeach hasbonai. Anyway, so Reb Tarfon says, shem yavoyu liyadi, if books of minim come into my hands. Forget about this idea of cutting out, forget about this idea of just letting them get burnt or cutting out the names of Hashem. Shani esrefos in the esa azkaris rebehana. I'll burn them together with the azkaris in them. Because, first of all, you have the azkaris, the names of Hashem in them were not written. They may bechlal have had in mind. They were, again, according to Rashi, they were talking about books that were written by the actual minim. When they write the name Hashem, they're having in mind their avodah zarah, or they're having in mind their yoshka, whoever it is, you know, so they have no kedusha in them. Or the Rambam phrases it a little bit differently. Okay, they didn't have the kedusha of Hashem, like this we learned earlier in the Masechta, that when you're writing the name Hashem in a Sefer Torah, you're supposed to have in mind harini kosev l'shem kedushas Hashem. They're not doing that. And bechlal, you don't want to leave any zecher for the minim. You don't want to leave any remembrance of the minim or anything that they do in the world. So therefore, Reb Tarfon says, go ahead and burn the whole thing. Shafilu adam roidef achrav lahorga. You should know something, says Reb Tarfon. Even if somebody is chasing after a person intending to kill him, the noch, or he means himself also, even if somebody was chasing after me to kill me, but you know, the Gemara usually likes to mention these things in third person because the person doesn't want to say a klala about himself. The nochash rotz lakishay, or even if a snake was after a person to bite him, nichnas leves avodah zarah, a person would be better off. And Reb Tarfon is saying, I would rather go into a house of avodah zarah, a temple of avodah zarah, to save myself, rather than going into a house or a church of one of these kinds of people. Because the minim recognize Hashem, and they're actually deliberately they're deliberately going against Hashem. Again, these early Christians or whatever, they were Jews originally. They know about Elokus, the Yodeas Rabbonim Maskavnim Limerdbo, and then they deliberately go and a koifer in Hashem. Whereas the Goyim, at least the Avodah Zarah, okay, they don't really know what Elokus is. They don't know what they're doing. They're just, you know, they learned it from their ancestors and they're just following in their ways. You actually have Gemaras in other places. You have an Avodah Zarah where it says the idea that the goyim in particular outside Eretz Yisrael are just minigavisayim biyadeim. They're just worshiping avodah zarah because what they learned from their parents and their grandparents or whatever. It's not that they truly believe in it. So the minim are worse than the avodah zarah, and therefore even to save your life, you wouldn't be able to go into their places. Now the halacha is not so simple like that. The halacha is in Shulchan Aruch it talks about the question: are you allowed to go into a base of a zara or a base minim or whatever in order to save yourself? So in Shulchan Aruch it says actually you are allowed to go into a base of a zara, into a church or whatever in order to save your life. On the other hand, the Bach seems to disagree with that, and they discuss why. Is it because on the face of it, even Reb Tarfon over here is saying that you're allowed to go into a base of a zara, just not a base a minim. But anyway, the mainstream halacha is that if a person is allowed to go into a church or a base of a desert or whatever in order to save their life, but not, let's say, for example, to go in there, you know, you're going to go in there in order to look at the artwork or whatever there you don't have there, or nowadays you have sometimes voting stations or inside churches or whatever. So there it's a lot more iffy to go in there for such purposes. Anyway. Continues Reb Tarfon, Va'alei Makosav Omer, about such people who know Hashem and deliberately deny Him, Jews who deliberately deny, Elokus. On such people, the pasuk says, Va'achar Adelas Va'Mezuzah Samtich Reinich. You put your remembrance, which really means Hashem's remembrance, you put it behind the door and behind the mezuzah. In other words, Rashi says, you remember, you know what Elokus is, you haven't forgotten it, but you've deliberately like thrown Hashem behind the door because you don't care about him. So they're much more serious. So these kinds of things are much more serious than even the Ovid Avodah Zarah, and therefore their books should be burnt altogether and forget about this question their paraphrase says of letting of just leaving them alone, or what Rabbi Yossi is saying of cutting out the names of Hashem, etc. Okay. Rabbi Shmuel says a different way of looking at it. You can make a kavachomer. In order to make peace between a husband and wife, the Torah Hashem says that my name that was written in holiness should be erased in the water. Namely, we know by the parasha Soita is erased into the water in order to make shalom between a husband and wife. Halalu, so these people, these minim, shematilim, kina ve'eva v'tachris ben Yisrael, avim shemayim, that they cause hatred and that they cause jealousy and hatred and competition between Yisrael, between the Jewish people and Hashem, Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so that we should be destroying their sfarim. In fact, Marashah says the vote is here. We're talking specifically about the Christians and other people that have this kind of theology that says that Hashem rejected the Jewish people. We know it's a famous part of their theology, of their worldview, that Hashem rejected the Jewish people because of their averus and instead chose them as Hashem's new chosen people. So therefore, so Rabbi Shmuel is saying that look at this, they're actually trying to cause hatred. They're trying to say that Hashem hates us and rejected us and whatever. So for sure, you should be destroying their sfarim. About such people, David says, Hashem, don't I hate the ones who hate you, the ones who stand up against you, I argue against them. I hate them with the utmost hatred. They became my enemies. So those are the kinds of people, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Perek Lamed Beis of Tanya, that those are the kinds of, usually we say, you have to have Avos Yisrael for every yid, and even if he's doing Averus, you still have to have Avos Yisrael, you have rachamim for him together with the fact that you hate the averus he's doing, but then you have the minim and whatnot that we're describing over here, and he refers to our Gemara over here, that then we say tachlis sinas nesim. Now, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the kind, you know, nowadays you have tinokas chenishbu, nowadays you have Jews that get involved with Christianity or with various other religions or cults or whatever because they don't know what Yiddishkeit is all about. That's different. We had in Rambam, in Perek and Shlosha Prokim, it was yesterday, in Perek Echad, it was a couple of weeks ago, about the difference between the original Koroyim, for example, and the ones who grew up in the ways of the Koroyim and don't know what genuine Yiddishkeit is, where you have to bring them back, b'chevle avoses ava. So yeah, continues Rabbi Shmuel. Uchshem she'en matzilin oisim mipnei adleika. Just like you don't save these sifrei minim from a fire, kachen matzilin oisim lemin amapolis. The same way you don't save them even on weekdays from, let's say, a collapsed building, v'lemin amayim, or from a flood of water, v'lemin davar amabdon, or from anything else that would destroy them. You just leave them to be destroyed where they are. So according to Rashi, this is talking about on Shabbos. This is talking about even on weekdays. So just like we don't bend the rules of Shabbos to save them from a fire, the same way, even on weekdays, you don't save them from any other disaster that would be threatening them. You just leave them to be burned. According to Tosfos, we're talking about on Shabbos. And we're saying like this, with a fire, the Chachamim made these various gzeiros about what you're allowed and what you were not allowed to save because the Chachamim were concerned that you're going to panic, forget that it's Shabbos, and go and put out the fire. As opposed to when it comes to a flood or any of these other things, there's not necessarily that much of a panic with a collapsed building or whatever. A collapsed building, let's say, it's not like it's going to get any worse. So therefore, you would think maybe you are allowed to save them. And no, therefore, the Braisa is telling us that not. Another point also, Rav Moshe makes a point in one of his truvas that maybe the vote is that with a fire, you have like the Sefer Torah is staying intact until the moment it catches on fire, and then it gets burnt pretty quickly, and that's it, it's gone. As opposed to, let's say, with a mapolis, let's say with a building collapses on it, you could argue it's more of a gnai, that it's sitting there under the rubble, still intact for a long time. Maybe there should be more of a heter to save it. No, we're saying because it's Sefer Minim, you know. Okay. Boiminud Yosef Achanan Mirababo. Okay, so now Yosef Achanan asked Rabohu a question as follows. We're talking about Sifrei Minim that we're saying you don't save them. Now, what about Hani Sifrei Debei Avidan? What about the Sforim of Tanakh that are in the house of Avidan? Are you allowed to save them from a fire on Shabbos or not? Now, what is Be'avidan? Rashi explains that the Minim wrote them for the Be'avidan means a place where they have debates. It's a place where the Goyim would have debates with the Jews on questions of Torah and other such things. Like we have, you know, famously in the Middle Ages, you had many times where the Chachamim were forced to participate in such debates. Famously, for example, the Ramban had against, there was a Meshumad and a bunch of other priests against him. You have the Rabbi Yosef Albo, the Sefer Ikrim, and a bunch of other Chachamim in Spain were forced to participate in such a debate. So Be'avidan is a place like that. The Minim wrote Sfarim to use in these debates. So are you allowed to save such Sfarim from the fire? Maybe we say they didn't write them strictly for purposes of Avodah Zarah. They're writing them for the purpose of the debates with Jews. So maybe they have a little more Kedusha in them. Rabbeinu Hananel explains it a little bit differently. Be'avidan is not necessarily where they have religious debates per se. It's more, it's a place in general where they have debates. They have people come there from different nations and they talk about different Divrei Chachma and they have debates on different Divrei Chachma. So like academies, basically. Various Sforim are there because they have to have a library where people need to look up things that they're going to use in their debates. So the question is, what about those Sforim? So the Gemara says, "Ein v'lav v'rafi b'yadei." Rabbi Abahu answered yes, and then he answered no, and he wasn't really sure whether those have enough kedusha to be saved on Shabbos. So more about this be'avidan. The Gemara says, "Rav lo ozel be'avidan." Rav would not go to these be'avidan, to these debate places. V'chol shekein l'bein nitzrufi. Certainly, Rav would not go to a bein nitzrufi, which is a place of actual avodah zarah. Because, again, unless maybe it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, you can go there, like we said before, but not where it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh. So he wouldn't go. Shmuel, lebein nitzrufi le'ozel. Shmuel would not go to the bein nitzrufi, but lebein avidon ozel. But he would go to the bein avidon, and he would participate in the debates and the discussions over there. Aside from what we just said, that Be'avidan is a place of debates and Bein Nitzrufi is a place of Avodah Zarah, I saw in Oruch HaShalim, which is a kind of an updated version of the Oruch that was made about 100 years ago by a Yid named Kohut. So he has a long, interesting explanation over there along the lines of, he explains based on certain words in Persian that Avidan means like the new Persian religion that was starting to develop in Shmuel's times, and Nitzrufi is like the old Persian religion that from before his time. So he explains like Shmuel, because he wanted to keep up good relations with the new government of Persia, which believed in the new version of their religion, so he felt it necessary to go to the Be'avidan, as opposed to Bein Nitzrufi, which is the old ones anyway, then therefore he didn't bother going there, as opposed to Rav didn't want to get involved with that at all. Okay. Omru lo l'Rava, so they asked Rava one time, also about Be'avidan, my time alay osis l'Be'avidan. One time the Goyim asked him, why don't you come to our local Be'avidan and get involved in the debates over there? Omalahu, so he wants to evade them with an excuse. He says, Dikla Planya Ika Ba'urcho, there's a certain tree on the way between here and there, Bakoshili, and it gets in the way. The roots of it make a thing in the ground. They stick up above the ground and it's hard for me to pass by. Or Rashi says another explanation, it smells bad and therefore I can't bear to pass by it. So they say, okay, Nekre. Okay, so we'll uproot the tree. He says, Duchte Kashili, the place where it was is still going to be hard for me, because either now there's going to be a hole in the ground and it's going to be hard for me to walk by, or the smell is still going to linger over there. Again, he's just using an excuse. Marsha says a deeper idea behind it is, he's telling them, so they're asking, why don't you come to the Be'avidan? Rava held that it's also up Yalacha to go there, because there's a certain element of Avodah Zarah involved. So he's saying to them, the tree, which represents the Torah, prevents me from going there. So they say to him, we'll uproot the tree. You know what? We're in the Be'avidan. We'll go and we'll bring all kinds of proofs that the Torah is not true and that it's to be replaced with our religion. And he tells them, come on, Duchte Kashli, the place where it was is very hard for me to understand how you think you could replace the Torah with some ideas of your own. So therefore I'm not going to deal with it. The Maharal says another vote on it. He says that the tree also represents that there was some there was some enemy of his over there. There was some person who hated him and would try to get him in trouble. So he says, I can't go because of that person. So they say, okay, Nekre, fine. We'll throw him out of the group and then you can come. He says, no, Duchte Koshali, what's going to happen? Then Adadabi, he's going to be all the madder at me that he got kicked out because of me. And then he's going to try causing me even more trouble. So I'd just rather avoid the whole situation in the first place. On the other hand, says, I'm one of them, meaning I'm good friends with the guys who come to this Bei Avidan. So I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of going to the Bei Avidan and getting involved in debates with them because I'm on good terms with them. But Zimna Chada also, one time Itaka went, Boel Sakune, and then we're gonna get him in danger. So you see that you don't think that you know these guys and you can handle them. Yeah. Okay. Another at this point, actually, you have a line that's missing from our printed Gemaras, but you can see it at the bottom in Chesrona Sashas. We mentioned, so we're talking about these Sifrei Minim. So now you have, we know when we come to the Minim, when we come to the early Christians, besides that they wrote Sfarim of Tanakh for themselves, because after all, they have our Tanakh as part of their Bible as well. They also wrote their own books, which they call the New Testament. The Greek name for those writings of theirs is something like Evangelion, which means something like the good news. Now, if you have in English, you have words that come from it, like evangelism and whatever. Anyway, so the Gemara mentions over here that Reb Meir Kordele Evangelion. Reb Meir, it says in Chesronus Hashas, used to call their writings Evangelion, the falsehood of the blank parchment. In other words, he took the word Evangelion, this Greek name of those writings, and turned it into a derogatory word in Lashon Kodesh, that it means it's a falsehood, as if it was blank paper. Rabbi Yechanan called it Evangelion, and Rabbi Yechanan would call it Oven with an ayin, the sin of blank paper. Again, playing off the word Evangelion. So the censors, obviously, the censors later on, when the Gemara was printed in various Christian countries, the censors didn't want people writing such things, so they took it out, and it's printed in Chasar and Sashas. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection a story. Ima Sholem Devesu, the Rabbi Eliezer, Achse de Ram Gamliel Havoy. Ima Sholem, that was her name, she was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer, and she was the sister of Ram Gamliel. This is Ram Gamliel of Yavne, after the Churban. There was a certain philosopher, which means Rashi translates as a min. The Aruch says that it just means chachme, that it means chachme or umus, or it means a stargazer or something. And Tosfos brings that it means somebody who loves wisdom. Tosfos mentions that there was a yid who came from Greece and explained that the word philosophos comes from two Greek words that means somebody who loves wisdom. Anyway, so this philosopher, this min or this philosopher or whatever, the Shivavuse in his neighborhood, he was a judge, to have a shokel shmodelim kabel shuchta. He gave out on himself a name, he gave out himself on a reputation that he doesn't take shoychad. Now, really, he would take it in secret, but he pretended as though he's this honest, incorruptible judge who will never accept shoychad. Yeah. Well, Ima Sholem and her brother, Rabban Gamliel, wanted to make fun of this guy. They wanted to expose him for what he really is. So one reason might have been because there may have been Jews who are going to him, even though you're not allowed to go to a Goyish court when there's a Beis Din available. So it might have been that there were Jews going to him because he had this good reputation and they wanted to demonstrate that that's wrong. Or we'll talk about at the end of the story another reason why they might have done this. Anyway, so Aila Leshragad Dahava, so she, Ima Sholem, one time brought this Goyish judge, this philosopher, a golden lamp. She brought him in secret the golden lamp. Doesn't necessarily mean she gave it to him, by the way. She's not. It may mean that she just showed him that I'm going to give this to you as sheikhah. Anyway, and then they came to a court case in front of him. So again, on the surface, what we're talking about is they just made up the court case for the purpose of exposing him. But again, so Dodo sort of showed him has an interesting explanation that what happened was after the Churban, and many Jews, of course, died and were killed during the war of the Churban and during the plague and were killed by the Biryonim, etc. The Romans at that point passed a law that says that anybody who died during that time, their property is nationalized unless you can bring proof that you're the heirs of the deceased. Otherwise it goes to the government. So now, therefore, they have to go to this Goyish judge in order to get their estate, because Reb Shimon Gamliel did not survive the Churban. Now, usually we say he was one of the Asar HaRugei Malchus, although it's not so simple, because most of the other Asar HaRugei Malchus were about 60 years later. So in fact, Doris HaRishonim says that Reb Shimon Gamliel was not, in fact, one of the Asar HaRugei Malchus. It was somebody else, he says, Reb Shimon Ben Askan, who was. But still, we don't find Reb Shimon Gamliel after the Churban. So either he died of plague or whatever during the siege of Yerushalayim, or maybe the Biryonim killed him, or we don't really know, but whatever it is, he was no longer alive. So now, okay. So his heirs now, so Ima Shalom and Reb Gamliel are his children. So they're coming now to get their Yerusha in order that the government doesn't take it over. This is how Doris HaRishonim explains the story. Okay, so again, she brings this judge in secret, a golden lamp, for Ozel to come in, and then they came to him for a court case. Omrele, she says, I want to have a portion in my father's property. So this Goyish judge says, sure, go ahead, divide it up between yourselves, 50-50. Omrele, so Reb Gamliel says, what do you mean? Ksivlon, in our Torah, it says, Bimkoim bra, brata leiteres. Where there's a son, the daughter doesn't inherit. So therefore, I get the whole Yerusha, and Ima Shalom doesn't get anything. Amalahu, so the judge says to them, no. Min yoyma de golisin me'arach, and ever since you went into Golos from your land, is natilas araisa de Moshe, the Torah of Moshe has been taken away, v'es yehiv sifra achriti, a different book has been given, and again, in the uncensored Gemara, it spells out that this is the book of the Oven Gilyon, has been given, meaning, in other words, again, the Christians' writings that make the second part of their Bible. So that takes over, because that's the Christians have this whole idea that the Torah has been replaced by their laws. And in there it says that sons and daughters inherit equally. So therefore that overrides your Torah. Tough luck. So the next day, Reb Gamliel came to the same judge with a donkey from Luv. Now, we learned back at the beginning of the fifth parak, we learned about a creature called a Luvdikim, or Luvdikis, whatever, which is a very powerful, strong donkey that comes from Luv, from Mitzrayim, or Libya, or some area over there in North Africa, which is extremely strong and really good quality. So he brought him that as the Shoychan. And then they come back to continue the case. Amalahu, so now the judge says, okay, I found more information. Shfilis the sefer de sifra. I looked further down in the sefer that I have, the book of Evan Gillian or whatever that I have, v'chosiv bay, and it says it in as follows. Ano lo l'mifchas min araisi de Moshe asisi. I have not come to take away anything from the Torah of Moshe. V'loy l'osfe al araisi de Moshe asisi. And I haven't come to add anything to the Torah of Moshe. Or on the side over here, it says a different gear. It says, Ela loisif al araisi de Moshe asisi. I only came to add, because it was Yoshka and his followers came to add various new ideas of their own, but he supposedly didn't come to take anything away. And after all, in the Torah of Moshe, it says that when there's a son, the daughter doesn't inherit. So I have to find in Reb Gamliel's favor, after all. Really, of course, it was because of the Sheikhad that he got. Our Torah says that when there's a daughter, the sons don't inherit. So what it is, he's saying like this. Originally, he had said that ever since the Bismithish was destroyed, the Torah has been replaced by our writings. But now he's saying, in our writings themselves, it says, and you actually have, in the Christian scriptures, and in the New Testament, you have actually a line very similar to what the Gemara is saying over here, where they quote Yoshka as saying something like that. I haven't come to add anything to the Torah of Moshe, or to take anything away from the Torah of Moshe. You have two different versions in our Gemara over here, whether he's saying that he's coming to add or whether he's coming that he's saying to that he's not coming to add, just like to clarify it or whatever. Whatever the case, the point is, so he actually says, this judge says that after all, I found, you know what, you're right. The Torah of Moshe is not to be changed. Now, Taka, how does he reconcile it with what he said before? So the real reason is because of the Sheikhad, of course, but what's the excuse he's using that after all, before he said that the Torah is supposed to be replaced? So there's a couple of different interesting explanations. One of them is he might have reinterpreted the first one to say that when we say a daughter inherits, we mean if, let's say, you have You have, let's say, a granddaughter. So you have, let's say, the guy had, let's say, the person who passed away had two sons, and one of the sons died. Then the halacha is actually that his daughter inherits together with her uncle. So you might have reinterpreted it that way, or you might have just said al derech, like you have a tfois loshen achron. You have an ashtar that when you have two things in a shtar that contradict each other, in general you go according to the second loshen, according to the loshen later on in the shtar, because like he changed his mind. So like here he might have used the same excuse. Al-Habdil, the Muslims have something similar with their scriptures, where if they have a contradiction between earlier parts and later parts, then they also say that they also say that the later one takes precedence. La'avdil in the Gemara, sometimes we say the Lishna Achrina is the one that we follow the halacha. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Omrele, so Ima Sholem says to the judge, wait a minute. Nahur Nahurich Kishraga. Let your light shine like a lamp. Like he's trying to hint to him, wait a minute, what about that lamp that I offered you as Sheikhad? Omrele Raman Gamliel. So Raman Gamliel answers, nah, Asa Chamro Vatash Lishraga. The donkey came and kicked over the lamp. So in other words, now everybody realized what this guy really is, that he's really taking Sheikhad, and that he's honest that he made himself out to be. This was all in front of him, yeah. So this way, so now that's it. So now this reputation that he made for himself that he's Nick Sheikhad has been completely destroyed. And again, according to Dodo Soto Shonim, they were in this for a practical reason, because they needed to actually get their father's inheritance so it doesn't get nationalized, so it doesn't get taken over by the Romans. And according to everybody else, it may have been like this also, they show him up for what he really is, and like this also, no Jews in particular will ever go to him again for justice. No, if he's the local, fine, but like this, maybe they can get him fired. If they show that he takes Shrecha, then they can get him fired, and then, yeah. But the point would be, in other words, like this, according to that way of looking at it, like this, you might have had Jews who are not just they don't have a choice but to go to him, but like they'd say, Lachatchila, we might as well go to him. Why should we go to the Rabban? And we might as well go to him. He's honest. Now, when we see he's not honest, then they're not going to do that. But yeah. The Maharal says a vote on it, by the way. We know that Hashoichad Ya'aver Eine Chachamim, that bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. So that's the connection with the lamp. That's why she Davka used a lamp as her Sheikhad to represent that idea. Like Sheikhad takes away your ability to see. Meanwhile, Rav Gamliel used a donkey because a donkey represents chumrius, like the materiality of Olam Hazeh, that this guy is fartift in, and therefore he's taking Sheikhad, even though as a judge he shouldn't. So like Rav Gamliel says, like, you know, she's saying at the end of it there, you know, your light should shine, you know, realize what the true judgment is. Rav Gamliel says, you know what, his chumrius is kicking away any traces of light that he could possibly have, because he's too much into Olam Hazeh and he's too much into Olam Hazeh in that he's willing to accept Sheikhad. So no, because the Gemara actually says Ailele, she brought to him. Doesn't necessarily mean they gave them to him. They weren't gonna waste good money on him. Because just the fact that they're showing, if you decide in my favor, then I'll give this to you. Yeah. They tell a cute story in that connection about a Rav who unfortunately used to take bribes also, even though it's of course also al pi halacha. And the Torah says, Ki Asher Chad Ya'aver Eine Chachamim, this Rav, when he was dying, whatever, when he started getting older, became deaf. So they asked him what happened. Isn't it supposed to blind him rather than make him deaf? And he says, because they never actually gave me the shulchan. They jingled the coins to me. Like I was able to enjoy the sound of the coins they're going to give me, but they never actually gave it to me. So I never enjoyed it with my eyes, only with my ears. So here maybe it's similar also. Like they only offered it to him. They didn't actually give it to him. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, named Ma Ein Koden Chola, we said, why are you not allowed to read Ksuvim? Why are you not allowed to read Ksuvim? We said, Mepnei Bitul Beis HaMedrash, because it keeps people away from the Beis Medrash when the local Rav is supposed to be darshaning in halachas for the Balabatim who can't learn Torah during the week. So, Omar Rav, Lo Shonu El Bizman Beis HaMedrash. When are we saying you're not allowed to read Ksuvim on Shabbos? Is only during that time when they're supposed to be having the Beis Medrash. Meaning, in other words, before the meal. They used to darish in on halacha before the Shabbos meal in the morning. So that would be the time when you're not allowed to read ksuvim. Aval shaloi bizman beis hamedrash, but outside of that time, after the meal, then they wouldn't darish in over there because people get drunk during the meal. And as it is, people are not going to listen clearly to the drasha. And the Rav himself actually is not allowed to pask in halachas in his drasha after he's drunk a revius of wine. So Shabbos afternoon, they wouldn't be darishing in halachas. So therefore, go ahead and read ksuvim then. Shmuel says that no, even when the Beis Medrash is not going on, you're not allowed to read Ksuvim all Shabbos. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so?" V'hon Nahauda Asre de Shmuel Haba. Nahauda, we know, was the city where Shmuel was the Rav and the Rosh Hashiva. In Nahauda, they used to read a section of Ksuvim as the Haftarah on Shabbos afternoon. They used to have, in other words, they would read, they lay in the Torah Shabbos afternoon, like we do nowadays, and they had a minute to read a portion of Ksuvim as a Haftarah for it. We don't do that. By Mincha of Shabbos, we don't read any Haftarah. But so Tosfos actually mentions earlier in the Masechta that yes, there used to be such a minig. The Gaonim mentioned that it still existed in a few places in their times. But basically, what happened was that there was a gzera against it at one point, and therefore they stopped doing it. And therefore, once they stopped, then they didn't start again in most places. So that's why we don't really have it nowadays. There was such a thing of reading a portion of Ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon. They say actually there's an interesting vote from Reuven Margolius and some others in Minig Ashkenaz. They have a Minig after Mincha of Shabbos. They say Kapitlach Kuf Yud Aleph and Kuf Yud Beis of Tilim. And during the winter they also say the Shira Malosin. That might be a leftover vestige of this Minig to read Ksuvim Shabbos afternoon because Tilim is part of Ksuvim. Anyway, so we see that in Nahadah they would read Ksuvim on Shabbos afternoon. So how could Shmuel be saying that the whole Shabbos you're not allowed to be reading Ksuvim? The answer is, Ela i'itma hochi itma. No, rather, if this discussion between Rab and Shmuel was said, then it was said as follows. Omar Rab, lo shonu el b'mkoyim beis medrash. Rab is saying, when are we saying that you're not allowed to read Ksuvim is when there's a beis medrash in town where the Chacham is going to be giving this drasha in halachas that people need to know. Aval shaloi b'mkoyim beis medrash, but if it's a place that doesn't have that caliber of beis medrash, and then you're allowed to read Ksuvim in such a place. Or Shmuel, Omar Shmuel says, no, ben b'mkoyim beis medrash, ben shaloi b'mkoyim beis medrash. Whether it's a place where there is a Beis Medrash or not, whether there's a place where there is a Beis Medrash or not, Bizman Beis Medrash ain't Kodin, Shalai Bizman Beis Medrash Kodin. You still can't read it during the time when there should be a Beis Medrash. So even if there's no Beis Medrash in town, nevertheless, you could still have, let's say, in the next town over there might be, and people could walk there if it's within the Tchum, or they can make an Erev Tchum or whatever. So even in a town where there's no Beis Medrash itself, you don't want people to be reading Ksuvim, because better they should be walking over to the nearby town where there is a Beis Medrash and where they can hear the Derasha, or maybe arrange before Shabbos to stay there if it's further away, whatever it is, as opposed to Shaloi Bizman Beis Medrash, when it's a time of day when they're not darshaning, namely in the afternoon, Kodin, then you're allowed to read Ksuvim. And v'az the Shmuel Tamei, in that case, Shmuel is going according to his own Shita, the Minahadah, Paski Sidra, the Ksuvim, the Minchasid Shabbos, because in Nahadah they used to do that. They used to lay in a section of Ksuvim in public on Shabbos afternoon. So that's one way of understanding the machlokes. Rav Ashi omar la'olam kedam moran meikra. Rav Ashi says you don't need that. You could actually explain the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel the way we did originally. That it's the time that Shmuel is saying you can't read it, even not bizman beis medrash. What about what they did in Nahadah? Ushmuel kedam Nechemya. Shmuel, when he says you're not allowed to, is saying that according to Rav Nechemya's shita. That there's a different reason, which we're going to discuss in a second, why you can't read Ksuvim on Shabbos. So when it came to practical halacha, when it came to paskening practical halacha for the people of his city of Nahadah, then Shmuel went like the Chachamim, that the only reason is Mipnei Bittul Beis HaMedrash, and therefore he allowed them to do it Shabbos afternoon. But when he says before not to do it, even during the day, he's saying that according to Reb Nechemya's opinion. That Reb Nechemya has a different reason why not to read Ksuvim. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Afal Pisha Omru Kisvei HaKodesh En Kodin Behen, even though we're saying that you're not allowed to read Kisvei HaKodesh, meaning Ksuvim, on Shabbos, Aval Shonin Behen, but you are allowed to learn in them, meaning the Midrashim on them. For example, Rashi says the Midrashim on Shir HaShirim and Kehelas. V'doshin behen, you're allowed to douche in them, again, like to learn the Midrashim on them, or to learn dinim that we learn from them, or whatever. Nitzrech l'pasuk, and also if the Rav during his drasha needs to see a pasuk from Ksuvim, maybe v'roya, but you can bring a book of Ksuvim and look up the pasuk. And then it's not like the Sfarim of Ksuvim are muktzeh, in other words, you're just not supposed to sit down and read them. So far, in other words, according to the Tanna Kamma, the whole reason is, we said, because Bitul Beis Medrash, because if you start reading Ksuvim, and Ksuvim are very interesting, then you're gonna get into that, and you're gonna miss the drasha that the Rav is giving on practical Hilchus Issei V'Heder. But Amar Reb Nechemya says a different reason. Why did the Chachamim say that you're not allowed to read Kisvei HaKodesh on Shabbos? In order that people should make a kavach haomer for themselves, people should say, "B'kisvei hakodesh ain't koden." If you're not even allowed to read kisvei hakodesh, v'choshken v'shtorei hedyotis, how much more so you're not allowed to read common people's documents? Which means, for example, let's say Rashi says documents that have, for example, business calculations or invoices or whatever on them, or letters that people write in order to find out things for their business or whatever. So you're not allowed to read those on Shabbos. Actually, Tosfos gets into the question over here. What about reading letters on Shabbos? Are you allowed to? You received a letter. So let's say you opened it before Shabbos. Are you allowed to read it on Shabbos? So Tosfos discusses, maybe it depends. On the one hand, you can say that you what are shtorei hedyotis that you're not allowed to read over here is things that, for example, where you have debts or other business things mentioned in them. But a letter you might have, let's say a letter might be the kind of thing you don't know. There might be something of pikuach nefesh or some great need in there, and therefore you're allowed to read it. And even if you already read it before Shabbos and you know that there isn't, still you might be allowed to reread it, basically. And Shulchan Aruch talks about a number of different details in that. We're going to talk about that more in more detail in the next to last perek of our Masechta. So in about a month, Bez Hashem, we'll deal with this whole matter of Shtorei Hedyotis. But in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions various things. There's different dinim about reading letters. Maybe you're allowed to because you get Hanah from reading them. Are you allowed to read books? Are you allowed to read books on Shabbos that are not books of Torah? Maybe yes, maybe not. It depends on the kind of books, whatever. Okay. So according to the first version we had in the Gemara, according to the first understanding, the machlokas that we had in the Gemara, then Rav would be saying that you're allowed to read them all Shabbos if you're in a place where there's no Bis Medrash, and Shmuel would be saying that not even that, you still have to not read them during the time when the Bis Medrash is going on. And then according to Rav Ashi's understanding, the Machlokas was saying that Shmuel would agree you're allowed to read them outside of the time of the Bis Medrash. He's just saying Rav Nechemya is telling us that you're not allowed to read them on Shabbos at all because we don't want people to read Shtorei Hedyotis, and therefore that applies all Shabbos long. That's the point. In other words, we make a kavachomer. If a person is going to realize, if I can't even read Ksuvim, for sure I can't read Shtorei Hedyotis. Okay. Mishnah says, Matzilin tikka sefer ima sefer. You're allowed on Shabbos. Now we're talking about in the previous Mishnah, saving the Sforim on Shabbos. You're allowed to save the case of the Sefer Torah together with the Sefer Torah itself. But tikka tefillin ima tefillin. You're allowed to save the case of the tefillin together with the tefillin. The alpha pishi yesh b'seichan mois. Even if there's money inside the case as well. Now, by the way, you're not allowed, if the case is reserved for tefillin, you're not allowed to put money in it. But here we're talking about where you didn't have it reserved exclusively for that, or where you had the money in there first, and then you decided to, please turn that off until we're done. Anyway. And continues the Mishnah, to where, what place are you allowed to carry such things in order to save them? You're allowed to save them to a mavoi that's not completely open, meaning we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow what it means, but a mavoi usually means a mavoi that's closed in on three sides and it's open to Rosh Hashanah on the fourth side, and you have to put a lechi and korah over there. Ben Beseda says you're even allowed to save it to a mavoi mafulish, even to one that's open on both sides. But again, we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow the details of that. Okay, so the Gemara is going to start off with a discussion about skinning the Korban Pesach on Shabbos, which that discussion is going to lead into our Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan, Arba also Shechalis for Shabbos. If the 14th of Nissan comes out on Shabbos, Mafshitun is a Pesach ad a Choze, you're allowed now. So like this, you have the Korban Pesach is being brought on Shabbos. Of course, we know that. We know that part of bringing the Korban Pesach is you have to bring the emurim, you have to bring the fat and offer it on the mizbeach and various other internal organs and offer them on the mizbeach. So obviously, you have to strip off the skin from the animal in order to get to those. But usually you have, so on a weekday, you would strip the skin off completely from head to toe, and or from toe to neck, because you hang up the animal by its back legs and then strip downwards. The question is, what about on Shabbos? So Divrei Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Breker, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Breker is saying, you're only allowed to strip it down to the chest. Meaning what you do is you start from the legs, you strip down off the skin until you expose the area of the body where the emurim are, you cut it open, you take those out, you leave the rest of the skin attached until after Shabbos. The Chum say you strip off all the skin. So, now why is that? He would say the reason why you can't do any further, you've done what you needed to for Hashem, you've done the part to take out the Emurim, you shouldn't have to do anything else. El Rabbanan my time, but why would the Rabbanan say you're allowed to take off the whole skin? The Pasuk says everything Hashem did, he did for his sake, meaning you have to do things in a way that gives honor to the Korbanos. And the Gemara says, "V'hachal ma'ilamah ne'uika." So, what is there? How is there covered for the korban by taking off all the skin? Can you please wait another 10 minutes before you turn that on? I can. Yeah. Okay. As it is, I start at 6:30. Give me a break, please. We're almost done. Relax, please. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't. Okay. Can guys, please, let's talk about it afterwards. Okay. So what lamanehu is there in stripping off all the skin once you took out the emurim? Rabbi Yosef Amar Shalo Yasriach. Rabbi Yosef says this way, this meat doesn't spoil. You need to be able to roast the meat and eat it that night as a korban pesach. Like this, if the skin is left on it, it's going to get hotter and it's going to spoil. Rava Amar Shalo Yukodshe Shemayim Mutolon Kenevela. Rava says the reason is you don't just want to have Kodshe Shemayim. You don't just want to have the Kodshim sitting over there like a nevela, like it's just abandoned, like you have half the skin is on and half the skin is off. The Gemara says, "My benayu." What's the practical difference between those two explanations? Ika benayu demanach absurda de dahava. What if the Korban Pesach that's half skin is left on a golden table? So it's not a matter, there's no problem of that it looks like a nevela. You wouldn't leave a nevela on a golden table. But on the other hand, you have the problem that the meat may spoil. Inami yoma de istina. Or you may have the other way around. What if it's a cool day? You have a north wind blowing. So then the meat is much less likely to spoil. But on the other hand, you have the problem that it looks like a nevela. So those are two nafkaminas. Okay. So that's why the Chachamim say you can take off the whole skin. What about Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Breker? Hi, Paul Hashem l'maneu mayo. Like, what would he say? What about the fact that you have to do it in a way that brings honor to Hashem and to the korban? The answer is he would say shelo yotzi emurim kodem afshatas ha'or. He says all that means is you do have to strip off some of the skin. You can't take out the emurim without removing the skin. You can't just cut through the skin and the flesh and take out the emurim. You have to strip off the skin first. My timer. Now why not? Amar of huna breder of nas and mishum nimin. Because the problem is that then you have pieces of hair or wool or whatever that stick to the emurim as you take them out, and then it's not bekavadik to offer the emurim like that with hair or wool or whatever stuck to them. So he agrees you have to take off the skin in order to avoid that. That's the call. Paul Hashem l'maneu. That's acting in honor of Hashem that way, but not that you could actually strip off more of the skin than you need to take off the emurim. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with how this relates to our Mishnah, as far as moving on Shabbos, as far as carrying out from a fire the Sefer Torah together with its case. That's something else. That's if you're stripping off the skin all in one piece. That you're not even allowed to do on Yom Tov. We're not talking about taking it all off in one piece, but yeah. Okay. We learned it first. It comes up in Masechta Beitza, but it comes up in other places. I think it came up in Bechoros. I don't remember. Okay.